I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. The Victoria Times columnist Paul Wilcox joins me now. He's a columnist and editorial writer there. We'll discuss the current provincial election and referendum campaigns and more. His blog, where you can read all of his work, is at wilcox.blogspot.com. He's won a Jack Webster Award for Commentator of the Year, and his insights and observations have always been welcome here and elsewhere. He's much sought after. Please welcome back to the Planta on the Line program, Paul Wilcox. Good morning, Mr. Wilcox.
Good morning. It's good to talk to you again.
Thanks for joining us. Your column from a week ago in the Times mentioned that you just came back from a road trip. Where'd you go?
We were down into the United States with sort of the destinations of Yosemite and Death Valley, but it really gave us a chance to got an RV, and it was a chance to sort of poke around through a lot of the back roads and smaller communities down there. And it was, I think, as a British Columbian, it was pretty worrying because, you know, we seem to think that we've felt the effects of this the overall economic slowdown, but the sense down there was that things are much, much worse in terms of home foreclosures, business bankruptcies, even communities facing huge financial problems than we've realized so far. And there also wasn't really a feeling that they'd hit bottom yet, that the wave of foreclosures, for example, so far have even come close to taking the problems out of the housing market down there. So it was quite alarming to think that it could be a very, very rough at least 18 months to 2 years still ahead of us in this.
Is this your sense that in BC that we've hit bottom, or that we're past the worst?
No, I fear not. And I think that's one of the issues that people are probably going to have to think about when they comes time to vote in the election campaign, because the Liberal budget that was presented in February, and which the NDP has based their fiscal plans on as well, assumed that we pretty much had hit bottom, or that things weren't going to get dramatically worse. I think most economists think that the budget was over-optimistic, particularly on the revenue side, and I think the things that I saw in the States convinced me that not only have we not hit bottom, but that the recovery could be much, much slower than we anticipate up here, especially in our core industries like forestry and, to some extent, tourism, but right across the board. You know, we're, particularly in Victoria, I guess, we're kind of insulated from some of the effects because government is a pretty stable employer, but I think there's going to be a long, difficult time, and that means that both the parties have put forward what they say are credible fiscal plans for the next 3 years. The Liberals say they'll run deficits for 2 years and then they'll be back to balanced budget. The NDP wants to spend a bit more money on health care and social services, so they say they'll run deficits for 3 years and then be back to a balanced budget. I don't think either of those claims can be considered credible. So, you know, voters are then going to have to decide, well, if the revenue turns out to be much lower than anticipated, for example, how do I think Carol James is going to handle it? Will she just spend freely and run up bigger, longer deficits, which, you know, some would suggest is pretty consistent with the NDP's record through the 1990s. And then they have to have equal reservations about Gordon Campbell, because he's on record again yesterday after the CKNW debate, or this week after the CKNW debate. He said that he absolutely won't let the deficit for this year, for example, increase beyond the current forecast level of just under $600 million. So if revenue goes flat, that means he either has to increase taxes, which is unlikely, or he has to make very, very deep spending cuts. And it's, you know, the budget already called for 11 out of 20 ministries to have less money than they had in previous years.
You mentioned the radio debate yesterday. What did you make of it?
I listened all the way through, and I guess I thought it was a debate that sort of fit this campaign so far, and that none of the three leaders was able to do much that convinced me, or I thought would convince other voters, to go in a different direction. You know, they were all, I think, reasonably competent. Jane Stirk was probably took advantage of her ability to sort of comment freely without being responsible for actually having to govern after the fact to make some good points. And Campbell and James probably both fared okay in terms of maintaining their current support, but I don't think anybody did much to advance their cause in the debate.
And I guess we're just waiting for the TV debate next week?
Well, we are. I'm going to be very, very... I mean, one of the things I'll be interested in this year in the TV debate is the actual ratings for it, because there's so far a real sense of disengagement from this campaign. And, you know, we haven't seen any polls since the pre-campaign polls to indicate how people are responding to it in a more formal way. But my sense, certainly in in talking to people and in trying to get response to media coverage is that it really has not engaged people in a big way. There isn't, there are certainly significant issues, but there aren't issues where the people, where people, especially people who are undecided, feel compelled to swing one way or the other way. And it makes it a challenging campaign, I think, for the candidates and the parties, but also kind of a worrying one in terms of democracy to see what sort of turnout we're going to get.
You know, that's the one thing. I remember the last campaign, we were all talking about how there's no crises, so that's why people are apathetic and disengaged. And this time, there's a bit of an economic crisis. There is, we have some not so good economic times, and yet we still see that same disengagement.
Yes, it is. I mean, the crisis, I guess we need two things. You need a crisis, and you need a sense that there's a real difference between the way the parties are going to handle it. And in British Columbia, typically, I guess, you get the turnout expands and when people feel it's a close race and when there's some dissatisfaction with the current government. And I guess that's Carol James' challenge is people may not be overly fond of the Liberals. They may have lots of policy differences with Gordon Campbell, or there may be things about him that make them uncomfortable. But they don't see any good reason to boot him out at this point, and Carol James hasn't offered one.
Do you think the fixed election dates have anything to do with this apathy?
That's a good question. I have not thought of that angle at all. No, I don't think it should. I mean, I suppose it does in one sense, in that, the Liberals, if they hadn't agreed to fixed election dates, which I think are a good thing, I think they're a good thing in leveling the playing field for the parties, but then they might have been able to call an election last year before the economy got soft and position themselves much more significantly as the person to manage into the future, or they might have tried to wait a little bit longer. So I suppose in that sense it's true that governments at one time either seized on really good moments for them to call elections or put it off until the last possible moment until they were in a terrible shape to call the election. And in either case, you probably did tend to have more public interest around it.
So this is, I guess, Carol James's fault that in these economic times she hasn't stepped up, has she? And I mean, people still, they don't see a reason to get Gordon Campbell out, right?
Yeah, I think that's Carol James's challenge. I don't know if you can call it her fault. I suppose partly you have to give credit to sort of the second-term version of Gordon Campbell and his government. And, if they were campaigning against the Liberals of the first term, who really didn't seem to like government, period, and were anxious to make it smaller just on principle, and had, all those issues around First Nations, cutting health, squeezing health, those kinds of things, if they were running against that, it would be tougher. But Gordon Campbell version 2, where he's got a little bit into the Ralph Klein ability to say, okay, if you don't like something, I'll give you something different. If you think we were too rigid on First Nations, we'll suddenly announce a new relationship and we'll swing that way. And that makes it much harder to tackle a government if they don't cling rigidly to unpopular positions. On the other hand, you give him credit because a lot of people would have said the carbon tax would be that kind of position, and there was a lot of pressure on him, even from within the Liberal Party, to change his position on that, and Campbell stuck to it on principle.
The last time we talked to you was in the fall, and this was, I guess, during the federal election campaign, and you just come back from the States then too, right?
Yes.
What was there's a difference, I guess, in the sense of feeling then and now, or is it much the same?
Down there, I think at
the time it was during the presidential election, and people were engaged, weren't they?
Yeah, people were engaged. The other difference is I was on the East Coast then, and I think there was a sense of... Yeah, I guess there was a heavy sense of engagement in that election that we don't see here. And Harry Neufeld did a presentation to the Times Colonist, the chief electoral officer, this week on voter turnout and what he expected to happen. And that was, as we were just talking about the kinds of things that can influence, that's obviously one of the factors that can influence. If you have a Barack Obama, if you have someone, truly exciting as a leader, then that too is going to generate new attention to the election and new people participating, and we certainly don't have anything like that going on.
This has been interesting to watch the NDP and the issue of the environment seem to get away from them.
A huge disaster for them, and I'm, and it's their own fault. I mean, fundamentally, it's their own fault. This should be an issue which they could be very, very strong on, because there are legitimate concerns. I think the nature of the run-of-river power projects at the very least deserves more scrutiny than it's got so far, and I think a lot of people are concerned about that. The Liberals' record, I mean, we've got provincial park campground closures. There's a lot of issues that they could be raising, but they really, I think, foolishly and wrongheadedly. So I've staked out a claim as being opposed to the carbon tax, which, you know, despite obvious, there's always going to be some elements of unfairness in a tax policy. There's always going to be some people who are disadvantaged when they shouldn't be. But broadly across the board, environmentalists and economists are saying this is a good and sensible way to affect people's production of greenhouse gases. If it costs more to burn fossil fuels, people will do less of it. And it's pretty hard to argue against that on a rational basis. The fact that the tax turned out to be relatively small as gasoline prices leapt upward and even after they've settled down means it hasn't been that painful for people. And it's cost the NDP hugely in terms of people who should be their allies are now not just being skeptical of Carol James, but they're actually coming out in support of the Liberals and Gordon Campbell. And I think it'll be interesting. It should be one of the really major factors on Election Day to see what happens to people who might have been environmental voters for the NDP. Are they going to go green, or are they going to go with Gordon Campbell? It's a big, big problem for Carol James. And I guess the other problem it's created for her is that the campaign so far, and we're almost 2 weeks into it, the halfway point, has been sort of sidetracked responding to attacks on her party rather than trying to get the chance to differentiate between the NDP and the Liberals, which is what she hopes to be doing.
It seems to me that those disaffected NDP and environmentalists, they'll go to Gordon Campbell just because of the carbon tax. That goes into my next question about whether the Greens will be a factor at all. Do you think they will?
No, I don't think they will. I think Jane Stirk has actually turned out to be a reasonably effective leader, so maybe she'll do half decently in her riding in Esquimalt here in the capital region. But the Greens under our current system remain pretty much a fringe party. If you look at their platform, it's a mix, it's a grab bag of some very good ideas, and not just about the environment. They have some good ideas on healthcare too, about ways of improving health authority accountability and measures that are not impractical. But at the same time, there are other ideas that are sort of half formed or appear to be catering to a specific interest group. So it's a fringe element. Again, it'll probably be races where the green vote is enough of a factor to tip the result one way or the other. But I don't think there will be that many this time. I think they're probably mired around their 7 or 8% at the outside turnout. If the Greens really wanted to make effective use of their time, they'd be campaigning as hard as they could for the single transferable vote system in the referendum.
What's your sense on the referendum? Do you think it'll pass this time?
I don't really know. I think once again, it's going to be very, very close. I think I don't know. I really don't. I mean, I would very much like it to pass. I think it would be an important step forward in British Columbia, but the problem with it, I guess, is that the opponents have so far been able to focus on what they see as the problems in the STV voting system, and there are problems with any voting system. And what the debate really needs to be shifted toward, if it's going to pass, is that simply a comparison between our current system and the single transferable vote system. Because right now the no forces are saying, well, maybe there's another form of proportional representation that would be better and we should hold out for that. The reality, from my perspective, is that this is could easily be the only chance we'll have to make a change from our current system for the next 2 decades. It would be a tragedy to say, we really like this current system where large numbers of voters aren't represented, where MLAs go into Victoria and immediately become robots who vote the party line, and where all the power is concentrated in the leader's office, both opposition and government, and exercised behind closed doors. So the idea that we would blow this opportunity is just terrible to contemplate.
And it's all about turnout, isn't it?
It will be, because, last time, turnout and convincing and overcoming fears, I guess, in terms of the STV. It is relatively complicated to explain to people. You can hatch all sorts of conspiracy theories about, this might happen or that might happen. If you just look at it sort of rationally as a voting system, then it delivers an opportunity for better representation, and there's no reason to think the results as they are in many, many other jurisdictions, can't be simply calculated and sort of fully transparently presented to the public. But yeah, voter turnout will be very important, and STV might help the overall voter turnout as well. I mean, it was so close last time, needed 60% support, got, I think, 58 and just a bit, that, the opportunity is certainly there. And it's another area where, by the way, you do have to give Gordon Campbell full credit for sort of putting principle ahead of expediency. There's lots of people in the Liberal Party who are not happy that this referendum is being conducted a second time.
And do you think it matters who people will be voting for in the general election, how they'll vote in the, like, I mean, we look at the no side, it seems to be one party dominating that campaign, and then the yes side, it seems to be from all parties. Did you think how people will vote in the general election will say what will happen in the referendum?
It will to some extent. I think, I mean, there's certainly a lot of NDP opposition to changing to the system, and to the extent that they're able to, as a party generally, to get a lot of their voters out, I suppose that could be a factor in it. But I don't know how support for it will run across party lines.
You mentioned in your column seven ridings that were close in the last election, and are they ones that we should watch on election night on the 12th?
I think it's too early for me to really speculate on ones that we should watch for the most part. I mean, there's a couple here in the capital region, certainly, that Saanich South, which the NDP held in the last election, and which David Coverley, the incumbent, isn't running against, and the Liberal candidate's fairly well known. So, you know, that's one. Kamloops, two of the Prince George ridings held by the Liberals. I mean, I think there will be some ones fairly early on election night where you'll know that if the NDP hasn't made gains in, say, Pat Bell's riding, where the Forest Minister, where there's been a lot of economic downturn, if they can't make progress in ridings like that, if they can't hold Saanich South, if they can't make gains in Courtney Comox's, where Stan Hagen's death has sort of, it was a close riding last time, but it's also created some opportunities. So you'll know fairly early whether they have any chance of making significant gains or whether the challenge for the NDP is simply going to be to hang on to the vote and seats that they have at this point.
These are interesting times, as usual, Paul. Thanks for joining us today. You're favored on the program, and I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. The website, again, is wilcox.blogspot.com. You can read him as well on the Victoria Times columnist website. Paul Wilcox on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.